stories about Elijah, one of which you heard just a moment ago, occur in a religious crisis about the middle of the 9th century B.C. in the northern kingdom of Israel. We are very fortunate to have these stories because, given the nature of Elijah's ministry, it is highly unlikely that they would have been kept in the royal histories of each king. After the death of Solomon, the country was divided into two kingdoms. The northern kingdom, called Israel, and the southern kingdom, called Judah. These events take place in the northern kingdom. On the surface, they appear to be about politics and strategy. Omri, who was the king of northern Israel, was the king of Israel, was the northern king of Israel, had done a very sort of presumptive and foolish thing. He had established his capital at Samaria, in the extreme northwest of his kingdom, way too close to the seat of the king of Tyre, who was the head of the Phoenicians, who were quite powerful at that time. In an attempt to secure his dynasty and perhaps give his son some peace, he arranged a marriage between his son Ahab and the daughter of the king of Phoenicia. This is nothing new. Royal families have been intermarrying for years as a way of keeping the peace. Ahab's daughter was named Jezebel. The problem was that Jezebel came with a lot of baggage. She was an ardent worshiper of Baal. Baal of Melkor, the deity of Tyre. And when she came to be the wife of Ahab, she did not give up her religion. She brought it with her with enthusiasm. Ahab was so accommodating, or maybe so fearful, who knows, that he built her a temple to this deity. Ahab was being forgetful and negligent about the loyalty he should have shown to Yahweh, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses. And so the people were left wondering who was in charge. The Baals claimed to be fertility gods who guaranteed the harvest and the weather. They were gods of storm and of fertility. And now the people of the northern kingdom who worshiped Yahweh, and they had Baal. And it was unclear who was in charge. From the time of the conquest, so-called, when the Israeli tribes invaded both sides of the Jordan River, there had been a problem, particularly on the west side, where the greatest concentration of population was. They they did not move into an unoccupied land. They moved into Canaanite territory, and many people worshipped many gods. And there was a constant struggle about that issue. So the conquest was, I'm a little skeptical about the conquest. Yes, they won a lot of battles. We have some accounts of them. Yes, they established kingdoms. We have accounts of those as well. But capturing the hearts and minds of the people is another matter altogether. And so, from time to time, Yahweh sent messengers, prophets, to come among them and remind them of where their loyalty should be. Elijah was among the greatest of these prophets, really the first major prophet we hear about. He was so important in the life of Israel that it should be no surprise to anyone familiar with the Bible that on the occasion of the Transfiguration, when Jesus is about to turn his face toward Jerusalem to confront the political order of his day, both ecclesiastical and governmental, he is seen talking with Moses and Elijah. Given the state of affairs, Elijah came storming across from the opposite side of the Jordan. He had a way of appearing suddenly and without warning. He was greeted as the troubler of Israel. He quickly saw that the people were religiously confused. They were living about from one opinion to the other. And he decided to end that ambiguity once for all. What he did was what you heard read. A contest with the 450 prophets of Baal on Mount Carmel, where he rebuilt the altar of Yahweh. And after a frustrating attempt by the Baal prophets to ignite their offering, he taunted them even further by dousing it in water and having it consumed, whereupon the people were impressed and considered that Yahweh must indeed be God. Wow. The only problem is that you didn't hear the whole story. I have developed this kind of curious affection for, if that's the right word, attention to, the people who select our reading on Sunday morning. They seem to think we are delicate or something, because they chop things off of lessons. Allow me to finish the story for you. And Elijah said to them, "Seize the prophets of Baal, let not one of them escape." And they seized them, and Elijah brought them down to the brook Kishon and killed them there. You can't imagine why they didn't want to let us know that. An earlier generation grew up with this version of the story. An earlier generation also grew up with something else we have been denied. A hymn. Let me read you two verses. "Once to every man and nation comes the moment to decide. In the strife of truth with falsehood, or the good or evil side. Some great cause, some great decision, offering each the bloom or blight. And the choice goes by forever, twixt that darkness and that light. Though the cause of evil prosper, yet the truth alone is strong. Though her portion be the scaffold, and upon the throne be wrong, yet that scaffold sways the future. And behind the dim unknown standeth God within the shadow, keeping watch above his own. There are struggles in this world between darkness and light, between good and evil. And like the people of the Northern Kingdom, we shift from foot to foot, trying to decide which side we are on. When we hear language, stark language like this, light, darkness, good and evil, sophisticated folk like you and me, tend to dismiss that kind of language. You say, well, that's the way fundamentalists talk. People, you know, literalists or something. There's an old labor union song made famous by Pete Seeger. Which side are you on? And that is an issue we need to join. Because like in the day of Elijah, what appears to be a political crisis is in fact a religious crisis. We came into this country attesting our belief in the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Joseph, and Moses, and of Christ, of course, as well. But now, generations later, just as in the Northern Kingdom, we find ourselves in a country full of gods, powerful gods, and people can't figure out which side they are on. If we dismiss the discourse about these things, we won't know what's going on. Let me name just three or four of these gods. The first is Mammon. Now, if that isn't too archaic for you, that means the love of money. It is a huge problem in this country. We love money. And we do strange things to have it. Another of these gods is power. Many years ago, after serving a church in Northern Virginia for a number of years, I came back to take the position of All Saints Chen Chase. And some person who didn't know that I already had been living in Washington for a long time came up and helpfully said to me, I'll tell you about Washington. And in this town, it isn't about family, it isn't about money, it's about power. I said, thank you. It's true. Power is one of our gods. Personal power, national power, social power, intellectual power. Power. the ability to lord it over another. The third one is self-centeredness. Since the Enlightenment, we have become people who are highly individualistic. And we like to cluster around us people who reflect ourselves, which is selfish and self-centered. People who look like us, talk like us, share our values, have the same level of education, and so on. We live in silos of homogeneity. And so, as we contend with these gods, as we lift our on one foot and then the other, trying to decide who we worship and who we serve, it is not wise not to name what we are doing for what it is and to see its consequences. The church is long overdue in its obligation to name what is happening in the spiritual crisis of our time. We do not at this time have Dietrich Bonhoeffer or William Stringfellow to speak with stark eloquence about dealing with the principalities and the powers. That does not mean the dynamic is not going on. And I tell you that when the Hebrews were wrapping up their scripture, when they got to the end, the last chapter, the last verses of Malachi, this is what one reads. Behold, I will send you Elijah, the prophet, before the great and terrible day of the Lord comes. I don't know where your attention is.